Our next guest of the evening is Sherwood Ross. Sherwood Ross is a legendary reporter. He started with the Chicago News Service. He was in the civil rights, right up close at the civil rights marches. He knew Martin Luther King. He's old school, and he's new school as well. He's keeping going, and we are so darn lucky to be able to visit each month with Sherwood Ross. Chuck is going to call Sherwood right now. Hello.
Well, hello, Sherwood. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Well, it was a sunny day in June in 1966. In fact, it was blazing hot when James Meredith and a few others, myself included, started out from Memphis, Tennessee, headed for Mississippi on a march against fear and to demand that black people get the right to vote. Howling mobs lined both sides of Highway 51 leading south out of Memphis and into Mississippi. The mobs were screaming at us. Some of the bigots dressed up in Confederate uniforms and rode along the highway beside us, waving the Confederate flag from horseback. Some of the riders carried sabers, so we might have been cut down like knights of old on some European battlefield. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen because the Tennessee State Police came between us and the demonstrators. They drove their police cars between Meredith and our group and the howling mob. If demonstrators got too close and tried to spit on us, the Tennessee State Police pushed them away. The Tennessee State Police were polite. The Tennessee State Police were firm. And the result was that when we reached the Mississippi line, the members of our little band were alive and well because the Tennessee State Police did their job. And there's a lesson for us in that today. That night we went back to Memphis to get a good night's sleep. That is, all the others went back to Memphis. And I caught a cab and taxied out to the Mississippi state line to have a look-see around. The place was eerily quiet. I decided to call the Mississippi governor's office, but he wouldn't come to the phone. I wanted to ask him, are you going to have the Mississippi State Police protect us the way the police did in Tennessee? I never got an answer. So I called the local sheriff in Hernando County, Mississippi, and told him I was the press coordinator for Meredith. And I said, are your county police going to protect us tomorrow? And the sheriff replied, we're going to treat James Meredith the way we treat any other nigger in the field chopping cotton. Well, you didn't have to come from Mississippi to know what he meant by that. That attitude explained 200 years of lynchings, torture, murder, and a million Bibles gathering dust because nobody in Mississippi was reading the Ten Commandments or the Sermon on the Mount for Love Your Neighbor. After hearing the sheriff's reply, I called my former employer, Whitney Young, of the National Urban League in New York, and I said, Whitney, looks like we're going to get shot tomorrow. Can you call over to the Justice Department and get us some protection? I was hoping for an FBI wagon with some agents who might make some arrests. Well, the next morning came, June 6, 1968, and the sun rose hot and fiery, and I met my friends at the state line, and we started to march into Mississippi. Meredith, cool and calm as ever, myself, scared stiff. Around 1:30 in the afternoon, we heard a rumor that a white man was waiting with a gun for us up the road. Meredith said, we'll walk for another half hour, then we'll knock off for the day. A few minutes later, the white man came out of hiding from a gully on the far side of the road. He had a rifle and he walked calmly toward us, repeating, I only want James Meredith. When Meredith saw this armed man on the road with the rifle, he started to run, tripped and fell face down on the highway. The man fired one shot and missed, then walked up to Meredith and fired at him point blank, hitting him in the back with countless buckshot pellets. Meredith screamed in agony and the man walked off across cotton field, calm as you please. I bent over Meredith, whose blood was on my shirt, and I said, Jim, the wounds are not that bad. You haven't lost a lot of blood. And the network camera crews that have been following us have called for an ambulance. This was in the days before cell phones, of course. And that time I saw the Orlando County police arrive, and they were putting the shooter in their police car. At that moment, the FBI also arrived, and two G-men came running up to me and said, who did it? I then realized I had seen the FBI car cruising up and down the highway every 10 minutes or so that morning. What a shock. If they'd only trailed Meredith by a few feet, if they had stuck close to him, they might have prevented the shooter from hitting him. It was a fact, of course, that J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI chief, was a notorious racist. Could it be he didn't want to prevent the tragedy? The FBI agents were there, but they might have stayed in bed. As for the Orlando County Sheriff, whose name I will not use, he only showed up to make a criminal arrest. He wasn't interested in preventing a crime. The shooter went to jail for 3 years, case closed, but was just a stun. Now, Meredith suffered in a hospital bed in Memphis for 2 weeks before returning to Highway 51 at Hernando, where he had been gunned down, and as far as I know, he's lived a long and useful life. In fact, they've got a statue to him in Mississippi, where he is now an honored citizen and historian. Why do I recall the story now? Well, police work is what you make it. When the police want to do a good job, like the Tennessee State Police, they do a good job. Those highway patrolmen kept the howling mob from beating us in their state. They did what good police are supposed to do. The FBI, on the other hand, was there, but it wasn't there. They were on the scene, but they were useless. Probably that goes back to the orders they were given. As for the Orlando County Sheriff, well, that wasn't police work at all. So today, when we are troubled by the murders of black children and black youth at the hands of the police, we say to them, we know how to find police who can do the job. If you're not going to protect those you have sworn to serve and protect, we will find police who will and prosecutors who will bring in indictments. I'm Sherwood Ross. Good night to every one of you. May the sun rise tomorrow on a better America.
Sherwood, that was just an incredible depiction of what happened. And I'm so glad that you brought it up in the context of what's going on today.
Well, sure. Sure. This, what's happening now cries out for justice. And that means justice at the hands of the police, as well as protection at the hands of the police. And believe me, black African Americans and their white allies have the power in countless cities to elect mayors and police chiefs, and states to elect governors who will do the will of the people.
And how can they exercise that power? I mean, clearly the rioting and looting doesn't really I mean, it draws attention, but it sends all the wrong messages.
Well, looting, of course, sends all the wrong messages. It always has, and it always will. The country is less, the city is less, and it's reckless. It's Nazism. Looting is Nazism, just the way shooting innocent people is Nazism. It's another form. Remember, the Germans on Kristallnacht and the Nazis on Kristallnacht in Germany smashed Jewish store windows. Well, what good did that do anybody? You know,
exactly.
I mean, it was exactly. A crime. And if somebody goes and smashes a store window somewhere in America, you're also hitting an innocent merchant, for Pete's sakes.
Exactly. Yet I see positive things happening in many places. I see people marching in the streets. And that's something, it seems like it has kind of disappeared for a while in America. And I feel like there's an undercurrent of revolutionary thought, but peaceful.
Well, there is, you're right. And people haven't demonstrated in the streets because there's been a change in many police departments around the country. We had some demonstrators in Miami who were demonstrating, of all things, about a World Trade Agreement. And the police pounced on them and began beating them with their clubs. They weren't doing anything wrong. But there is a fear of police that has grown up around the country. And it's because in city after city, people aren't making this up. They see these things happening. They see black people in particular being singled out. They see black people going to prison. They see black people being denied parole, being sent to private prisons, where the more bodies you have in prison, the more money you get from the federal government. It's that kind of thing. They see the cards stacked against them. And they are afraid to demonstrate. They are afraid to exercise their constitutional rights.
Well, I'm hopeful that people are going to start exercising those rights, because without exercising them, we will lose them.
That's right. Well, there are going to be all kinds of protests around the country in coming days and weeks, and people need to look for them. I know they're going to be in Washington, Chicago, Portland, Los Angeles, just a few of the cities where people have to take some risks and get with it and begin marching again. Otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. We're up against the most powerful military-industrial state ever. So if you're listening out there in Philadelphia or Dallas or Chicago, look around, because there are going to be demonstrations in your town. Berkeley, California, Cleveland, remembering Tamar Rice, who was shot to death by police in a public square, that kind of thing. It's time for Americans to march again. They may have shot down the leadership of the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King shot down. Whitney Young died swimming off the coast of Africa in very strange circumstances that need to be looked into. You know, we lost a lot of the leadership by assassination, and we need to find new leaders. People need to look in their mirrors when they wake up in the morning. They have to ask themselves, am I a leader? how do I become a leader? Well, the answer is will. You become a leader by an exercise of will. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd like to thank you once again for being on our show every month since the very beginning of our show. You know, we really appreciate it. We always look forward to hearing from you. And we'll talk to you next year.
Gosh, thanks to you, and have a wonderful New Year's.
You too.
Good luck to us all.
Chuck, that was a wonderful exchange with Sherwood, and it was very cool. That's all I can say. Very cool. I don't.